This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's going to be a busy Thursday, so buckle up. Andrew McCarthy's coming on. Going to settle some legal disputes. We talk about what James Comey's up against and Letitia James. They have one thing in common. They're looking to dismiss their respective cases. Andrew McCarthy on the legal aspects of that. Today, we know Blue Origin now has new life, has a shot at landing on the moon. They're going to be able to compete with SpaceX. Blue Origin's got their new Glenn rocket. Will launch a pair of identical spacecraft as NASA's Escape and Plasma Acceleration and Dynamic Explorers mission. The launch of the new Glenn rocket will also feature a landing attempt on its landing barge in the Atlantic Ocean. Nobody better than doing that than Elon Musk, but they want to prove that they can refuel to get to the moon and then eventually get to Mars. So we'll follow that. Secretary Rubio is going to have a big day. He's going to meet with the Argentinian foreign minister and then the Brazilian foreign minister. I know what's going on. They're talking about some trade deals, and they're talking about Venezuela. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
My administration and our partners in Congress will continue our work to lower the cost of living, restore public safety, grow our economy, and make America affordable again.
That is President Trump, making America affordable again. The Trump team rolls out another plan to help Americans get on track and maybe get a house. Get ready, everybody.
Number two.
Interdictions continue. The problem is interdictions alone are not effective. You have to disincentivize this industry that these terrorists are using to flood our country with heroin, with cocaine, with fentanyl.
That is Marco Rubio yesterday. Venezuela standoff. China inserts itself in the region to save Maduro as we build up our biggest show of naval strength in the region in American history. While at the same time, they seem to be, China, working with us on fentanyl, leaving their country for our country, at least the precursors, perilous times.
Number one.
I think we're in an unprecedented moment that demands that we consider whether or not it's the time for new leadership.
Do you think the Senate Democrats need a new leader?
Yes, I do, but that's not in my hands.
Yep, shutdown over. Fallout on the left just beginning as the entire party seems to be turning on each other. My question, how do we stop this from happening again with either party in power? I have had it. Nobody wins. Nobody wins. Republicans probably lost some points on every election fight, number one. Number two, because for some reason the perception always is it's Republicans' fault, whether they're in the minority or majority. And number two is I'm looking at the TSA agents, the federal workers, usually a lot of them paycheck to paycheck, most of them 1.4 million overall. Listen to this. Listen to the price that they've paid. 43 days. 1.4 million federal workers go without pay, 3 million missed paychecks, 10,000 flights canceled, $7 to $14 billion permanently erased from the economy. 15 times the Senate Democrats voted to keep the government closed. And they're mad that the government's open. Yes, cut five.
There's no one vote that ended this shutdown. We are talking about a coordinated effort of eight senators with the knowledge of Leader Schumer voting to break with the entire Democratic Party in exchange for nothing.
I think we're in an unprecedented moment that, demands that we consider whether or not it's the time for new leadership.
Do you think the Senate Democrats need a new leader?
Yes, I do, but that's not in my hands.
Right. That is every squad member feels that way. They're all socialists. They're way to the left. But the mainstream senators, they're getting some backlash, too. The ones that did the right thing, like Mark Peters, like Senator Angus King and Jean Shaheen, Fetterman, obviously, they get Eight the Cross, as well as Dick Durbin, as well as Tim Kaine. They cross, and they're getting some backlash. I don't think they care. I mean, who are you trying to impress? It is really dumb. When you look in the rearview mirror of what this was, it's really dumb. My fear it's going to happen again on January 30th. What you do to prevent that is get your appropriations bills done in regular order now. Overtime, but regular order. Matt Towery talked about why the Democrats started this. He's a pollster. And what they got out of this. Cut 12.
It was the Democrats that started this whole thing. They did it to hurt the Trump economy. Because as long as they could keep this shutdown going, they could hurt the economy. And so the economic numbers, when they come out, won't look as good. And they'll say, oh, Donald Trump's not delivering on the economy. That was half of the reason they did this. It wasn't all just about health care. And moreover, now you have, what is this, one congressman, a Floridian, who's fairly near me, wanting to hold this up. I don't care if senators get a little money. I want these people back to work.
Yeah. Number one, they shouldn't get paid. Number two is I'm for passing a rule, no more shutdowns. 10 years, 12 years, 4 years, no more shutdowns. If they did do this for health care, I mean, the health care is going up. If you look at the average rate when 2014, 2015, as Obamacare kicks in, it was $276 a month for the average American individual. Now it's $625. So simple math tells you it's more than doubled. What happened? They were supposed to control the rates. Instead, they didn't. Why? One was the individual mandate, which America hated, that Trump got rid of. So that made everybody get insurance whether you wanted to or not. The Supreme Court said that's unconstitutional. It's out. So what happens is the healthy people in their 20s and 30s had to pay premiums to help supplement, ideally, sick people when they get older. So ideally, if you're in the 20s and 30s, you need very little health care, but you got to pay. And that money goes to others. Problem is, when you're 20 and 30, you have, if you're doing it on your own, you have no room to spare. You just, the first thing you say, what don't I need? One thing you say, I don't need health care. And barring a catastrophic illness or accident, you really don't need it. You know, unless you insist on playing rugby over the weekends and some to that nature. And usually those leagues have their own insurance. But now they stopped doing it. That's why the money skyrocketed. And then think about this. No Republican voted for it. And then no Republican voted for the rescue plan. Nobody voted for the Inflation Reduction Act, which didn't reduce inflation, never was intended to. So now they want to turn around and blame Republicans for it? That, to me, is pretty strange. Cut 8 is Jim Jordan.
42 days for what? They didn't change anything we had in the big, beautiful bill, all the good things we did there that they were talking about initially. They didn't change anything in this failed Obamacare that they want to continue to subsidize. But they did make it tough on military families, air traffic controllers, American families in general, all to appease the left and all to go after President Trump. And I think the real question is, are they going to do it again in January? You just played from comments from Democrats saying it was worth it. We should do it. Are they going to do it again in 2.5 months? Because remember, this bill only takes us through to January 30th. They may try it again. So military families, Republicans are here to make sure you get paid. But Democrats, who knows what they're going to do in January?
Well, the thing is, just get your budgets done. Get it into committee and get it done the way it's supposed to be done. Don't take off in August. You know, work out your vacation days somewhere else. I know the past, the big, beautiful bill, everybody stayed through July. But it's not my fault. I didn't ask you to become a senator and a congressman. And your families have to understand that. I mean, in the beginning, when you used to play professional football, you know, it was like a 6-month season. Then you were off for 6 months. Now, if you're a professional football player, you're basically going all day, every day. You get a few weeks off here and there. There's really only a time in June when everybody's off. That's just the way it is. You want the pluses of being a senator from your state? Sometimes you got to work through to August or get it done in regular time. Get it through committee. Stop hanging up. Stop playing politics. The other big story is Venezuela. We have the biggest show of force ever in the region. Now we have the Gerald R. Ford. They said instead of staying in the Persian Gulf, let's come back home. And you do. And they're here. And guess what? Venezuela is a problem. They're home to Iran. They're home to Russia. They're home to China. China is beginning to send assets there. Marco Rubio is getting pushback from our allies who said they're not going to share intelligence about their Caribbean operations because they don't like what we're doing in international waters. Wait a second. You don't like what we're doing in Central and South America, our own backyard, but you like drugs in your country? We know how to stop it. We show you the intelligence. We showed even Democrats the intelligence. And I saw Adam Smith be interviewed yesterday by Jennifer Griffin, Democrat, and he pretty much understands that we're blowing up drug ships, drug boats. Cut 22. Marco Rubio.
Interdictions continue. The problem is interdictions alone are not effective. You have to disincentivize this industry that these terrorists are using to flood our country with heroin, with cocaine, with fentanyl. And by the way, destabilize the Caribbean in the process. Interdictions have limited to no deterrent effect. These drug organizations, they've already baked in the fact they may lose 5% of their drug shipments. It doesn't stop them from coming, continuing to do it. What you have seen is an impact on drug boats. You have seen much less of them. You're starting to see it. It's a in both the Pacific and in the Caribbean.
So into the fray now is Beijing. They unveiled a zero-tariff trade agreement with Caracas, that's the capital of Venezuela, and Shanghai at the Shanghai Expo 2025. They announced that by their deputy minister said that. Venezuelan officials said the accord covers roughly 400 tariff categories. So they're trying to help the economy. Quote, this really looks like China is going to completely take over the Venezuelan economy. This, according to Gordon Chang, it's going to decimate Venezuela's local industry. So they just going to keep it afloat so they could use it as a vessel to spy on us and try to have a presence in the region. But we got to get rid of Cuba and we got to get rid of Maduro in Venezuela. But that's key. Maduro in Venezuela is key. There's going to be an election in Paraguay. It's gone the conservative direction. There's going to be an election in Chile. It's gone our direction. And we know there's an election in Bolivia, no longer socialist / communist. They want conservative. It's really important we straighten out our hemisphere. And it's very popular with so-called MAGA. Here's Mike Lawler of New York. Cut 25.
We have rightly designated the cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. It's something I was pushing for years, and President Trump did this year. And ultimately, he is taking action to protect the American people. Over 75,000 Americans die every year from fentanyl-laced drug overdose. Most of these drugs are coming from the cartels. In Mexico and Venezuela and elsewhere in Central and South America. And the drug trafficking that they have engaged this narco-terrorist state of Venezuela, headed by an illegitimate president in Maduro, needs to be stopped.
So, and we're doing it. All types of pressure. They fully mobilized in Venezuela with that joke of an army. My hope is that Army realizes they have a joke of a president that's destroyed their country. I don't know if they're all being extorted, but if they could just go to the rightful elective leader of that country that won the election 70-30, we're not picking people out and putting them in there. We're saying the only reason Maduro's in power is because he's got the guns and they got the weapons. So if you want to know a Democrat that seems to get it, here is Adam Smith, cut 27.
So are we going to war with Venezuela?
I don't know, is the honest truth.
Have you been briefed?
Yes. Based on that briefing, I think the administration does not want to go to war with Venezuela.
Okay. Instead of saying that briefing was insufficient, and I know somebody that was in that briefing, and most Democrats were pretty impressed with the evidence that they had and the boats that they've blown up. From what we've seen, from the shots that we're taking, you know what drones can do. So I'm happy by this. Also, I want you to hear what Venezuelans' perspective is. Their joke of a defense minister said this through an interpreter, cut 28.
If they come to touch Venezuela, there you will see a people determined to defend this homeland to the death.
Yes, they want to defend their impoverished homeland that doesn't use their natural resources, extorts and beats and tortures their people. It's only the army that's keeping them in power. And we've seen this so often before. So we're going to take a look at this. Marco Rubio had to absorb some condemnation from France and Germany and the UK. They don't happy with conducting these operations. Who cares? Our allies in the Group of Seven, keep in mind, they're not going to share intelligence with us. I'm pretty sure we have the big hammer here. And then one thing Marco Rubio brought up, which is so true, going a little late here, but I do want you to hear this, about the pushback from our allies, Cut 23.
Any response to Venezuela's government saying that it's doing a massive military mobilization in response to what they call a threat from the United States?
Yeah, they don't have a government. There's an illegitimate regime that's basically a narco-trafficking organization that's empowered itself. By the way, many of the countries represented here at the G7 don't recognize the Maduro regime as a legitimate government. So I don't generally respond to what they're saying.
But then they came out and said something about our operations in international waters. Cut 24. They said that we're not happy about it because they have some islands and assets in the area. Well, these are islands and assets that are being polluted or used as drug stops on the drug trade. Cut 24.
We have very strong partnerships with the UK and other countries. Again, nothing has changed or happened that has impeded in any way our ability to do what we're doing, nor are we asking anyone to help us with what we're doing at any, in any realm, and that includes military.
Yeah, so he's not going to overreact, but when Trump hears, I'm telling you, you're going to see a posting on Truth Social that we're either going to cut off or rip up a trade deal, which I'm not for. We should have cooler heads, but the president should pick up the phone, call the prime minister, call Macron, and say, what the hell are you doing? It's bad enough the French are meeting with the disgraced Palestinian Authority leader, Mahmoud Abbas, to help him draw up a constitution. Really? He's 88 years old. He won one term and just stayed in power, got blown out of Gaza by Hamas. And now he needs help writing a constitution? How much more time do you need? And what are the French doing? 1-866-408-7669. We'll be back with some of your calls and some more insight. And the bottom of the hour, we bring the legal stuff in with Andy McCarthy. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're there.
Keeping you informed, engaged, and always a step ahead. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I have followed it, of course, absolutely. And now, it's absolutely troubling, you know, to see that. And I think we probably need more. And my understanding is that now that the House is back, now they have enough to activate that discharge petition. I think that's the technical term. And then I think everything should come out. I think enough people agree that it should just come out and just see where this goes and follow it, where the evidence, has at this point.
The day
absolutely.
After, that is Senator John Fetterman talking about the Epstein files and the pages that were released arbitrarily yesterday and, of course, pop up in The New York Times. Timing is definitely says a lot. Why? Because what was yesterday? One of the worst days for Democrats because they had to realize that the shutdown was over. They got nothing from it. It was humiliating. So how do you change the subject to avoid saying it? You release some documents that have Epstein talking about Trump and you have Larry Summers talking about Trump and what he did and didn't know. Now, I'll go over this in detail. I'll talk to Andy McCarthy about it. But for the most part, I go with The New York Times and what they said. They're still trying to get Trump on Epstein. Do you think that if there was something on Trump and Epstein that Joe Biden wouldn't have found it, Barack Obama wouldn't have found it, the people that bought you the Russia hoax, the FBI, they have this guy in custody. If you want to stop Trump, you do it. One thing is pretty clear. This guy, Michael Wolff, was going to do anything in 2016 to stop Trump from winning. Hopefully, he was trying to get Epstein to come forward with some type of allegations against Trump to stop him. And you hear the give and take. And this guy, Larry Summers, is a piece of work from Harvard thought that Trump was a terrible person. He thought there was possible, but didn't think there was a Russia involvement there. These are in the documents. And then he was somebody who wanted advice on how to basically lure women. So the other thing is they have victim number whatever, as the person that Trump evidently they're claiming in an Epstein email the president interacted with. That person is the woman that killed herself, sadly, before her book came out, which is now number one in the country, Joffrey. And that woman's on the record and in her book saying never had any type of information or anything untoward with President Trump. But that shouldn't mean anything, being sarcastic. We'll talk about more of that, the legal implications of that, and the sidetracking that really goes into effect. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
These emails prove absolutely nothing other than the fact that President Trump did nothing wrong. In this email you refer to with the name of a victim that was unredacted now and has since been reported on in this room, so I will go ahead and say it, Virginia Guffrey. She maintained that there was nothing inappropriate she ever witnessed, that President Trump was always extremely professional and friendly to her.
And they also go on in some of those emails to say that Donald Trump yelled at Epstein and said, stop plucking women from Mar-a-Lago. Trump asked, and then he asked him to resign. Epstein said, well, I was never really a member, but guys like that just get to go to these clubs. No one even asked for their membership. That's a world I don't run around in, but the rich hang out with the rich. We see Larry Summers interacting with Michael Wolff. We see Michael Wolff doing everything to take down Trump. This guy's an alleged reporter. And just pushing Epstein to come forward with anything about Trump in 2016. We got to stop him. You could get credit for stopping him. Andy MacArthur joins us now, Fox News contributor, former U.S. attorney for Southern District of New York, best-selling author. Andy, what do you think was the most revealing thing to emerge from the three pages selectively released yesterday to the New York Times?
Well, I don't think it really advances our knowledge of the most material things. I think it dispels this idea, which I never subscribed to, that Trump was involved in the worst of the Epstein activity. I have to say, Brian, I've always thought that was a preposterous theory because the people who ran, just to back up, if the Justice Department, and remember this case started back in the first Trump administration, when the Justice Department is trying to bury something, they don't indict it. If you want to bury the Epstein stuff, you don't indict Epstein. And then when Epstein dies, you don't then turn around and indict Maxwell. Because what happens when you indict cases is you get all this discovery that has to go to the defense, and you're not able to hide explosive information. And the other thing, and I say this as somebody who worked in the Southern District of New York, U.S. Attorney's Office, which had the Epstein case in the Trump phase, I say this as someone who worked in that office for 20 years. Not only is it independent from Washington, and does it have a long history of not covering embarrassing stuff up, the people who were running the Epstein investigation included Jim Comey's daughter, Maureen. Now, I think it was very bad for Trump to fire Maureen Comey. I think that was wrong. But putting that aside, she's got no one in that team that was doing that case had any incentive to protect Trump. So the idea that there could be these smoking guns out there showing that Trump was complicit in Epstein's criminal behavior, and that that could somehow be buried, and that the people up in New York had any motivation to bury it, has always seemed to me to be ridiculous. So we've known for many years, any of us who've followed Trump and who couldn't follow Trump over the last decade, right, that Trump and Epstein were running buddies for, you know, 10, 12 years, however long it was, and they apparently had a falling out. It doesn't speak well of Trump that he had association with Epstein, but we already knew that. And we had no reason to think that Trump was complicit in the criminal behavior. You could question his judgment, but not criminality. So I don't know. I understand all the fervor over this because, you know, a lot of people made a big deal about how, you know, the Epstein files contained all this stuff that was going to be compromising of all these people. And a lot of the people who stirred the pot on that, like Pam Bondi and Kash Patel, they're now in the government. Yep. And suddenly they say, you know, now we're not going to turn this stuff over. But if you get past the noise, I don't see that our knowledge of the basic important facts has been advanced by what we've seen so far.
I want you to hear what Megyn Kelly said in her show. The woman in the center of this is Virginia Joffrey. They said in one of the emails they spent hours with her when she said there was nothing untoward ever done with Donald Trump before, sadly, she took her own life. Cut 47.
The Virginia Joffrey thing is amazing. That the fact that they redacted that is just incredible to me. First of all, she outed herself as an Epstein victim. Like, you don't have to protect the identity of a victim when she's outed herself as a victim. Mm-hmm. Like, and they know this rule. Virginia Joffrey has been, before she died, all over the news. She wrote a memoir. Like, she gave tons of interviews. Why would they redact her name if that is, in fact, the name, as the GOP members of the House Oversight Committee are saying? Given the fact that she'd already been outed. So this is ridiculous, and it does suggest there was an ulterior motive.
Your thoughts?
Well, I think Megyn is right about I've now seen the email they're talking about, and Jeffrey's name is in it, so there's no doubt that Jeffrey was the person that we're talking about in that particular. I think the only reason to redact her name was because it was already out there that she had exculpated Trump from being involved in any of the sex stuff. So the people who redacted her name were obviously trying to suggest that maybe it was one of the other victims who hadn't cleared Trump, and they should have left Jeffrey's name in there. And I actually think, Brian, that the relevance of that email, again, I come at this as somebody who says it didn't make any sense to think that Trump was involved in the sex stuff. So I thought the relevance of the email was that if Jeffrey spent a lot of time with Trump, she may have told Trump a lot of things about Epstein, which is interesting. But that didn't make me suspect, aha, you know, now they have Trump complicit in Epstein's criminality, because we already knew that wasn't true. And I just... You know, again, I think there's a lot of pot stirring going on here, but I don't see that it's advancing much that we didn't already know.
Now, don't we see this pattern a little bit? Doesn't it remind you of the Russia situation? Because you did a book on this. You get a little bit of information, people roll with it, all the networks go with it. Then you get a little bit more information. You got thousands of pages could get released, but let's just put out the stuff that'll get people talking about Trump and Epstein. And it seems like they're orchestrating not to do a negative, to delay and distract in order to build something negative on Trump. It reminds me of the same way they did the Russia hoax, regardless of how it comes out.
I think that's right. I think, you know, having been observant of politics for, you know, many decades now, I have to say that in the last, say, quarter century, the biggest dysfunction that we have, and it's led to a lot of the problems that we have, is this this kind of arrangement between the mainstream media mm-hmm. and elements of the government to do politics rather than what their job is. So I think as a result, for example, our intelligence community has become very politicized, and we can't rely on them for the things that we need them for, like is Iran developing a nuclear weapon yeah. or not? And the media has become very politicized, so you can't rely on them for anything when most of us just want to have objective news. Most of us, I think, take the position, don't tell me how to think about it. What I need to know is what happened, and then I'll figure out how to think about it. But I think you have elements in the intelligence community in particular and elements in the media. They're on one political side in this country, and they've colluded to peddle all these narratives. And the result is we've got crappy intelligence and crappy media, which we need to have good on both of those ends.
Absolutely. So I want to talk about this. Let's talk about the legal system. James Comey has been indicted, as is Letitia James, by a grand jury, and they both want their cases tossed out because of Lindsey Halligan. They said should not be trying the case. She wasn't eligible to try the case. How does this play out in court?
So I think what ultimately will happen here is they have a technically good argument that Halligan, at the time that she indicted both James and Comey, particularly Comey, because this, I think Comey's indicted September 25th. That's only 3 days after she was appointed. Maybe it's 5 days. I think they have a good argument technically that Halligan is not eligible to be a interim U.S. attorney under the statute, because the 120 days that you're allowed to have an interim U.S. attorney in a district had already expired under Halligan's predecessor before Halligan was appointed. And then the thing that Pam Bondi tried to do to fix that is to say Halligan's authority to prosecute Comey and James comes from me, not from the interim appointment, because the congressional laws give the attorney general a lot of jurisdiction and a lot of authority to direct prosecutions herself. And what she tried to say is, in addition to the interim appointment, I appointed Halligan as a special attorney effective September 22nd. And if she had done that, I think the government would probably be fine here. The problem is Bondi didn't do that until October 31st. So the question is the judge going to let her backdate that authorization? I doubt that the judge will let her do that. But I also think there's another statute, Brian, that says if an indictment was filed on time, if it was within the statute of mm-hmm. limitations, and it gets thrown out for any reason, the government, even if the statute of limitations has now expired, the government has 6 months to bring new charges. So even if the case gets thrown out on these grounds, I think the case can be reindicted. And if Halligan were to convince a grand jury to reindict it, and especially if she had her subordinates do it, who are undoubtedly confirmed assistant U.S. attorneys, rather than doing it herself, I don't think they'd have a problem reinstating the charges.
The other problem is we don't know how if she could do it, right? She hasn't had no experience. Do you think that she'll just supervise the case and there'll be another lawyer in there working the case? Because that's a skill. You know, just because you're a lawyer doesn't mean you know how to do this, right?
Yeah, I would say, and this is not a comment. It's a good point to make. It's not a comment on Halligan's intelligence. I don't like, you know,
yeah, I know.
There's a lot of stuff that's been derogatory said about her. She could be the best insurance lawyer in the history of insurance lawyers, for all I know. But when I was a prosecutor, and look, I was a prosecutor for 20 years, they didn't let you, no matter, you know, you could have been summa cum laude coming out of Harvard Law School. They would not let you go to the grand jury by yourself. You had to go like 3 or 4 times with senior lawyers to see how it worked. And then when you finally were allowed to go, it was under the strict supervision of a senior lawyer, because the grand jury is kind of a funky proceeding. It's like 23 people who are lay people. The rules of evidence and other laws that apply in courtrooms for trials don't apply in the grand jury. So crazy stuff can happen in there. They can ask nutty questions. it's important to have experienced hands in there. And it's just not responsible to take somebody who's never done it before, no matter how good a lawyer they are or how smart they are. That's not where you want to cut your teeth.
I hear you. So we'll see where that case goes. And overall in the Comey case, where's the strength? If 10 means ironclad and one is weak, from what you know now, how strong are the charges against Comey?
I think it's a zero. I don't think it has anything to do with Halligan's status. And I think there's even a good chance that Comey's going to lose the vindictive selective prosecution claim, even though he's got some pretty strong evidence on this. I think the problem with the case, Brian, is that the indictment is incoherent. It doesn't tell Comey what it is that he's alleged to have done that's criminal. And I, as we've discussed before, I find the most frustrating thing, you know, there's a lot of people who are friends of mine who are annoyed at me for saying I think there's dim prospects to the Comey case. The reason I say that is because I think the things that people are rightly angry about regarding Comey, like the Russiagate stuff, like the fraud on the FISA court, that's all stuff that you should be annoyed with Comey about. But it's not what he's charged with in this case. What he's charged with in this case is Ted Cruz asked him questions at a hearing about whether he authorized Andrew McCabe to leak to the media about Hillary Clinton. And the problem is, number one, everybody knows, including McCabe and Comey, that McCabe didn't speak to Comey until after the Wall Street Journal article came out. And the other thing is, when Ted Cruz asked the question, and I'm a Ted Cruz fan, but when he asked the question, he botched the question. So he didn't say Clinton he didn't say Clinton investigation. He said Clinton administration.
Comey. Yeah, I hear you on that. And they could play that back. I think there's more to the case. Don't you feel as though they're going to expand that case? You heard about the letter that was found in Comey's handwriting, talking about what he knew leading up to this and basically a plan in place to hit him with the Russia charges. So that I think this is just the beginning. Don't you think they're going to expand it?
See, the problem is that the reason that they brought these charges is because this is the only thing they thought they could squeeze in under the statute of limitations. The testimony here, I don't think they wanted to bring this case. They have a lot of stuff about Comey. They don't think this is particularly strong. They brought this case because it was within the 5-year statute of limitations. And most of the bad stuff that happened under Comey, remember, Trump fired Comey in May of 2017.
It's a long time
and
ago.
Most of the stuff that happened with Russiagate happened in the summer of 2016. So we're now talking, you know, it's nearly 10 years ago some of this stuff happened. That's their problem, I think.
Andy McCarthy, always educational. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
What if your home security could stop a break-in before it even begins? That's not science fiction. That's Simply Safe. And right now, their early access Black Friday sale is changing how we think about protection. Traditional systems wait until someone's already breaking in. Simply Safe's Active Guard outdoor protection, powered by AI, detects threats before they reach your door. Real security agents jump in instantly, confronting intruders, letting them know they are on camera and the police are on their way. And if needed, setting off sirens and spotlights. It's proactive protection that stops crime before it happens. And here's the best part. No long-term contracts, no hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime. It's been named Best Home Security System by U.S. News & World Report for 5 years straight. And with a 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try completely risk-free. So, if home safety's been on your mind, this is your moment. Right now, my listeners can take advantage of their biggest sale of the year with this exclusive early access to Simply Safe's Black Friday sale. And save 60% on any new system by going to simplysafe.com/Brian. There will never be a better time to get real security for your home. Go to simplysafe.com/Brian. Stay protected and stay one step ahead with Simply Safe.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
GDP growth right now about 4%, then that shows that the income growth that we need to get it more affordability is on the path to happening. And the bottom line is that the last consumer price index surprised down. It was lower than expected. Mm-hmm. And it was actually would have even been lower than that because there was a refinery shutdown that caused it to go slightly higher. So we see inflation under control and the economy booming. But we understand 100% why people are still hurting because we haven't made up all the room that was lost under Joe Biden.
Right. And the president wants everybody talking about it more. The Dow hit an all-time high. If you have a 401k, you feel it. Other investors feel it. Others don't. So now Bill Pulte came up with an idea. He made his money in mortgages. He had a 50-year mortgage. That's one try. Some people say, I don't want that, too much interest and takes too long. Another theory is portable mortgages. From what I understand it, so if the problem right now in housing is no one's moving. Why? I have a 3% mortgage. What's the rate? 6. Why does that make sense? I'm going to suck it up and stay in a smaller house. I'm going to suck it up and I'm not going to move. So he says, what if you could carry that mortgage rate for your new mortgage? So if you go to that bigger house, you go to the bigger city, whatever it is, you bring that rate with you. Would that unstick and would that break up the frozen real estate market? Yes, along with building more housing. Portable mortgages is the latest idea to break the logjam caused by the lock-in effect, which is happening with the president believes by the Fed. They're also talking about bringing rates down. So that's going to be interesting. I think it's an interesting idea. I wonder if it came up last night. I'm sure it did when the president met with the business titans, the banking bigwigs at the White House yesterday. So when he meets with them, he's talking about you. Brian Kilmeade.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there already. We've got a lot going on today now that the government's back working. But I thought it was ironic. We tossed to our reporter, Mark Meredith, this morning, who said the lockdown's over, but everybody left. Do you realize they came back in to vote after being off 6-7 weeks and they all left? Really? You go to leave on a Thursday. There's nothing for you to do. There's no work to catch up on. There's no calls to answer. Everyone left. So it's Democrats left in disgust. Because they can't believe they got nothing out of this lockdown except for pain for the American people. Josh Krasshauer is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour, talk about where we go from here. There is a lot of stuff going on today. Already there has been a press conference with the Governor DeSantis in Florida talking about all the gains they made with ICE. Also, it's pretty ironic that in Chicago they announced major arrests and crime decreases all across the board while they fight against Trump. He's effectively brought crime down for them, even though they don't deserve it. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
My administration and our partners in Congress will continue our work to lower the cost of living, restore public safety, grow our economy, and make America affordable again.
Yep, that's what the president wants to do. He's got a few plans to do it. He's got a tour that might queue up to get it done. Trump team rolls out another plan to help Americans get on track. Get ready. For plan B.
Number two.
Interdictions continue. The problem is interdictions alone are not effective. You have to disincentivize this industry that these terrorists are using to flood our country with heroin, with cocaine, fentanyl.
Venezuela standoff. China inserts itself in the region to save Maduro of Venezuela. They're starting to have shipping goods, defying the embargoes. So the president not happy about this at all. China trying to hold on to its vassal state in our hemisphere.
Number one.
I think we're in an unprecedented moment that demands that we consider whether or not it's the time for new leadership.
Do you think the Senate Democrats need a new leader?
Yes, I do, but that's not in my hands.
Shutdown is over. Fallout is just beginning as the entire party on the left seems to be turning on each other. The moderates, the ones that voted for Republicans, the extreme left wing, mad at leadership that's not left wing. My question, how do we stop this from even happening again and keep it from the crazies? As much as I thought the Tea Party was an effective movement that really reconfigured and realigned the Republican Party, in the short term, it really hurt. And that's with the shutdown that they're declaring and the primaries that that eliminated candidates with a better chance of winning, and most of which, outside Rubio and Cruz, ended up losing. even though they were ideologues and they probably would have done a great job, they weren't for these purple areas. And believe me, every seat matters. That's why Democrats got to panic that Mamdani won. They got to panic that a socialist won in Seattle. They are angry, angry that Chuck Schumer collapsed. Here's the president of the United States yesterday. Cut two.
In just a moment, I'll sign a bill exactly like we asked Democrats to send us all along many days ago. This cost the country $1.5 trillion, this little excursion that they took us on. Republicans never wanted a shutdown and voted 15 times for a clean continuation of funding. There's never been a time when one or the other party ever didn't sign a continuation. It's just a continuation, not a big deal. It's a continuation, and we'll talk later. Yet the extremists in the other party insisted on creating the longest government shutdown in American history, and they did it purely for political reasons.
It cost 1.4 million federal workers working without pay, 3 million missed paychecks, 10,000 flights canceled over the course of 43 days. It cost the economy $14 billion we will never get back. Jared Golden, these are the Democrats in the House that voted for it, opening up the government. Jared Golden, Adam Gray, Don Davis, Henry Cuellar, Tom Suozzi, and Marie Guneskamp Perez of Washington. So that's what reopened up the government. But the penalty was huge. Cory Booker, among the many who want Chuck Schumer now to resign. We need new leadership. A lot don't want it because they want to run for president. I think it's going to probably be someone like Klobuchar. They'll hate her too, eventually. So I'm not going to go over all the flight cancellations. You know what you're dealing with. I just know that every day it's supposed to get better. And I think that's important too. How about this? As I mentioned before, the president's trying to do different things to get our economy going and your economy going. So he feels like we're growing at about 4% because of the shutdown. It's probably going to look at 2% this time. But he wants people, for example, to be able to buy a bigger house. Why would you leave a 3% mortgage for a 6% mortgage or a 7% mortgage? The president's talking about a portable mortgage. Okay, you're in that house. You can't move. But what if I told you you can keep your 3% mortgage and you can go where you want? So you keep your 3% rate and you go. Now, it's not what happened in 2008 or leading up to 2008 where people got mortgages they weren't qualified for. They had to put a third of the down payment for. And they eventually, with an adjustable rate, when rates started going up, they went belly up. And the whole economy collapsed and major institutions fell. What you're going to do is with their eyes wide open, and I hope this was brought up last night with Jamie Dimon and company at the White House. With their eyes wide open, you got to tell the banks, I got to unstick the real estate market. Nobody's budging. We went up so dramatically. Even though 6% isn't terrible, it's good historically, it's bad over the last 15 years. No one's moving. So we got to do something. And I think they might be understand it. I assume they'd be open to it. They should draw up qualifications for it. Obviously, being adjustable wouldn't be good. But what can you do for people to try to get them into a house? So they're talking about, too, a 50-year mortgage. 50-year mortgage gives people an opportunity on a long term to make a payment that possibly they couldn't afford to make. They'd have to rent. Rent is going up too, but they don't own it at the end of the day. This would give them an opportunity to own. Brian Moynihan joined me on set, Bank of America CEO. And he was talking about inflation and how it affects people. Cut 34.
Now, the reality is you got to be careful about all the different inflations that, you know, the housing inflation, rent inflation, effectively, is very different for a renter than it is for a homeowner, because a homeowner has a mortgage at 3%, and their costs did not change at all, where the renter's costs went up. So you had these successive ways. Wage growth was strong. It's covered it up, but now we're back in equilibrium, and now we got to be diligent to make sure that inflation comes down. Well, we got to watch the labor market to make sure that stays strong, because right, that provides a comp.
And we don't even know what the labor market is. We see a lot of layoffs on jobs, not because a company is doing bad, but because of AI in many cases. So we'll see what happens. I like the fact the president's coming up with things. The other thing I would do is the president loves this stuff. It wouldn't be a favor. It wouldn't be, oh, I got to put you out there to talk to the American people. I would go on a tour of Texas. I would go to Texas and I would meet with people in smaller towns. And then I would go to the border and I'd see the wall going up and talk to border agents about how few people are getting through. And then I would go to Missouri, I would go to Indiana, I'd go to parts of Florida and find out what people are thinking. The president's great at that. Go sit at their table. What are you guys thinking? How do we get through to you? How do we help you? saw a great feature on 60 Minutes on farmers and how tough it is on them, especially with the tariffs. They trust the president to get it done. He's got it done with China. Now we got to get other people to do the same thing because we have the superior product. I think that's where the president should head. Also, the other thing that the president has nesting there is a lot of the aggressive tactics used by ICE, and I'm a big fan, are turning off the Hispanic community. I think in many cases, the Tom Holman, Kristi Noem are at loggerheads. They have a different view on how we get rid of illegal immigrants in our country, criminals first. And some of the people that I think the HHS secretary is picking up, Homeland Security secretary is picking up, there's no warrants. It caused legal problems. Get the worst first. Show the police record. Show where they are in another country. And then we go from there. President's going to start paying the price in the Hispanic vote. If you look at certain counties in New Jersey, the reason why Chitterelli didn't do as well. Now, I know he's got other issues, but I thought he was a fantastic candidate who worked extremely hard and knew the issues and would have done a great job. But maybe it's because as some in the Hispanic community think the president's being too aggressive, you know, meeting people in a courtroom that are going through the process and arresting them. If they're going through the legal process of immigration, work visas to see if they qualify, I don't think there's any reason to arrest them until they follow through, especially if they're actually in court. So things like that can change. The perception can change. And the president should go to immigration and just swear in some people who are doing it legally that want to be Americans, took the test, paid the money. What do you think? I see you up there, 1-866-408-7669. I'll get some calls. Then we're going to go inside politics again. J.D. Vance was very impressive yesterday at that MAHA convention. Is it just a virtual fait accompli that he's going to be the nominee? Should it be? Tell me what you think. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, Sharon. It's Donald Trump, and I just wanted to wish you the best and the family. Great. Honestly, it was amazing. He was an amazing guy. I met him a few times, and I want to tell you, he was unique in every way and talented. So I just wanted to wish you the best, and it's a tough thing. I know how close you were, and whatever I can do, take care of yourself. Say hello to the family. Thanks. Bye.
So that was President Trump leaving a message for Sharon Osbourne after the passing of Ozzy Osbourne. And she told everybody it really meant a lot that the president would even think that to call after he passed away. But he's a very thoughtful guy. He's always sending notes in the mail. He's always done this. I got a few signatures from when he was a businessman. If I come by and do an interview, he would come by and send it. I get a thank you note in the mail. Or if there's an article written up of an interview we did, he would sign the article and send it back to me. I'll give you another example of something he did. I did the book, The Games Do Count, and I'll be doing a sequel on it. He's in it. So he put the book by the phone. And while on The Apprentice, every time he picked up the phone to call anybody, you'd see my book there. Well, the sales just went through the roof. And I was getting calls, watch The Apprentice. And sure enough, it was there. So I sent a note to him thanking him for putting the book there. And then he flipped the note over and thanked me for thanking him and for putting him in the book. And then later he would tell me, I had no idea the book was there. I was just leafing through it. We started taping, but it was in the background. And I had different things that they made a cartoon of Donald Trump looking at the television of the three of us on Fox and Friends. And it was pretty cool. And he says, Donald Trump's chief advisors, right underneath. You know what he did? He found a copy of the article from the actual newspaper, signed it, and sent it to Fox. I mean, he's just into that. And you find a lot of successful people always go back to the handwritten thank you. So he's very personable. I mean, that's one of the reasons why if he did this tour of meeting people to find out where they were economically, got away from Wall Street a little bit, I think that he would thrive there. Gary in Chicago. Gary, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Trump is talking about making things affordable again, and he talks about the gas prices being down. But if he wants to lower grocery prices, he needs to get the diesel fuel down. I went by a truck stop the other day, $2.99 for gasoline, $4.50 for diesel. And these trucks, you know, they got 200 gallons to fill. So, you know, it could be $800 to $1,000 to fill a truck. And I just think that there needs to be more talk about getting the diesel fuel
good
down.
Point. I haven't heard that.
The groceries come down. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. I think it's going to be a part of it. I don't know if you saw what Scott Bessent was on with us the other day. They're going for individual items, too. Coffee, fruits, bananas. We get them outside our country predominantly. I didn't know we had to go outside our country for bananas, but what do I know about farming? So we have to go. So now we're reducing some of the fees and try to get them in and get the price lower. And then you just make sure supermarkets do the right thing. So that would be one thing. Every little thing matters, especially when you're talking about a dollar or two per item. So if the fuel is down and then the prices come down and inflation drops, I want all these supermarket owners to get a profit. They got to survive. But you may put them in a competitive environment. Maybe they'll adjust their price and make sure they're not gouging. And I think for the most part, I'm not like Barack Obama. I'm not like Joe Biden. I don't think all these guys are gouging. But I like the idea of the president just going into nuts and bolts. He also feels like they just did, you know, tax on tips, tax breaks for Social Security. You buy a new car, you're going to get a tax break on that. All these things haven't kicked into gear yet. And I think it all matters. Think about it. You're in the car business. I don't care if you're a salesperson. I don't care if you're a sales manager. When you were able to get and incentivize people to buy cars because they're going to get a tax break, this might be the moment. That helps the salesperson. Then you become a consumer. Then it's service. You got to service that car. It all helps if you just get everything going on multiple directions, depending on what industry you're in. John, listening on WOKV in St. Augustine, Florida. Hey, John.
Good morning. How are you?
What's happening?
Life is good here in Florida. 72 degrees, sunny. There you go.
St. Augustine, beautiful, historic.
Yes, sir. Love it here. Love it here. Listen, you know, I wanted to say thank you to you and Fox reporters and conservative radio and the channels, because the mainstream media still, CNN, MSNBC, they still twist things negatively against Trump. It damages our country. And then remember when Biden was in office, they never reported anything negative against him, even though he did nothing to help the country. So it still goes on. We have to keep the dialogue going out there, the narrative, and you all do a great job doing it, explaining the truth, the positivity of what's going on in this administration.
I mean,
it's very important.
Yeah, I just think you just got to be fair. You know, for example, I love that he's doing nine things at once. I love he's in Central and South America. I wish he would give him a tomahawk, so I disagree. On H-1B visas, I disagree with Laura. Laura seems to be against the H-1B visas. I'm against the abuse of it, but I like the concept of it. So you can have debates within the policy without being negative because things are a little bit more complex. Sometimes I think we should be emphasizing more legal immigration and less illegal immigration. I think people would understand that it's a destination. If done right, you'll get in. So I think all that helps, John. Appreciate it. Just I want to pay the other side. So as I mentioned before, the voicemail for Donald Trump left for Sharon Osbourne. The whole family was around. They played this on tape. This is the reaction to Trump going out of his way to leaving a message. Cut 54.
A man that I know, I worked with for a month. I spent 1 month with him and his wife, who was always gracious, elegant, just a delight to talk to. And he was always, how are the children? How's Kelly? I'm so proud of Kelly and Jack for what they've done, and their manners are great. And he was just a great guy to talk to. And he has always treated me with respect. Listen, I'm not American. I can't vote. I don't want to vote. I don't vote for anyone. I vote for no one. Never have, never will. All I know is he's treated me with respect, your father with respect. He wanted nothing from us. Nothing. No. Melania the same. Nothing. And they have been great. And for him to take his time to do that for us. And because, do you know what? He doesn't live in a bubble. He knows what's going on in the streets. He knows what is going on. And I can't say that for our prime minister.
Yeah, he's terrible. Starmer. he's going, his numbers are dropping. And the UK has this great idea. Let's raise taxes. And they're all proud of it. We need more money, so we're going to raise taxes. Good luck with that. You want to get your economy going and incentivize some entrepreneurship there? Have they invented anything in the UK these days, except for the great Piers Morgan, which was a great invention? All right, we're going to come back. Josh Krasauer, we're going to go inside the numbers. Don't move. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Leader Schumer and the overwhelming majority of Senate Democrats waged a valiant fight week after week after week, month after month after month, starting in September into November, in order to make sure that we were being clear with the American people.
So Hakeem Jeffries, it was an epic fail. I mean, he says the fight has just begun. All right, does that mean you're going to not negotiate and just wait for January 30th, put in another leader, and then try to break your old record on shutdowns? Josh Krasauer joins us now, Fox News Radio political analyst, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, I'm amazed about the level of angst among Democrats and anger at Democrats on Democrats, more than anything I can remember. What about you?
Yeah, well, it's kind of remarkable when you think about the big picture, Brian, because Democrats, Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, decided to initiate the shutdown because they were worried that their base would get upset if they didn't show that they were fighting. That was the whole point of it. No one really thinks it's about the subsidies. It's about trying to show that they're anti-Trump and they're going to fight against Trump. And that was – Schumer got so much heat from the base the first time around where he kept the government open and funded the government that he was feeling that pressure and decided to shut it down the second time. Well, they're back to where they started because they did not get anything of consequence, anything substantive in this 40-day plus shutdown. And the base is still mad at them. In fact, they may be even more mad at the leadership of the Democratic Party than when this thing started. So the whole point of this was to satiate, pander to the left wing of the party, and they didn't do it. They actually made things worse for themselves. We'll see if this is an issue. There are a lot of shutdowns historically are big in the moment. Sometimes they get forgotten by the time elections roll around the following year. But it is kind of remarkable how little Democrats got and how invisible, frankly, someone like a Schumer and the Democratic leadership has been during this whole crisis.
Well, they kept saying the same thing over and over again. Hakeem Jeffries saying the same thing over and over again. But there was no – they thought they were in the right. And you could say they maybe did better in the election because of it. But their comments afterwards are really against each other. I mean, listen to some of this. Cut five.
There's no one vote that ended this shutdown. We are talking about a coordinated effort of eight senators with the knowledge of Leader Schumer voting to break with the entire Democratic Party in exchange for nothing.
I think we're in an unprecedented moment that demands that we consider whether or not it's the time for new leadership.
Do you think the Senate Democrats need a new leader?
Yes, I do, but that's not in my hands.
So what do you think they go for? They're going to go and maybe oust Schumer. This is the scenario I see. He goes all the way to the midterms, announces his retirement, and they'll figure out who's ever not running for president, who the best person is to lead them, probably Klobuchar perhaps, and they'll get just as mad at her. Because Kevin McCarthy basically lost his job because he didn't do a shutdown. So Schumer's the bad guy for having the longest shutdown ever. What do they want? There's no plan. Anger is not a plan.
That's right. I mean, anger is not a plan. We've seen it's not easy to be a leader in Washington these days because there are as many divisions within the parties as there are between them. And Schumer, there's a lot of things you can criticize him for, but he didn't have any good options, and they're kind of just mad for the sake of being mad, and because the base is mad, and it's just anger that's not directed at anything of real substance. I do think Schumer, if you look at the polls in New York, Brian, Schumer would get crushed right now in a primary against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. He's been running scared of that prospect of being challenged from the left. I mean, I'll give this to Mitch McConnell when he was a Senate Republican leader. He did not run away from the tough decisions. He embraced the fact that sometimes his own members were upset at him, but he actually was out there in the public defending what he was doing. Schumer is running scared. And this is a guy who actually – McConnell knew he still could win his primary despite the divisions within the party. Schumer is not acting like someone who's confident about his own political standing and, frankly, about the political standing of the mainstream wing of the party.
Yeah, kind of interesting. So the other story would be, what do you expect the Republicans to do on health care?
Well, I mean, it sounds like the one concession was they're having a vote on on granting these subsidies, which is not going to pass. Democrats will make the argument that they've raised the salience of health care as a political issue going into the midterm elections. And then that may be the case. So I don't think if you look at the results from the off-year elections, I don't think it would have made it, you know, Democrats won by the margins that they did. I don't think the government shutdown really was the decisive factor in that. But look, healthcare is going to – that's the one issue if you look at polls. Republicans still hold an advantage on some of the core issues, whether it's immigration, crime, you know, a lot of the security and safety issues, foreign policy. Democrats are hoping the economy – I mean, they're betting on the economy. That's a big worry, I think, that Trump needs to pay much closer attention to. But healthcare is the other issue that Democrats feel like they have an advantage
True. So do you expect the Republicans to do anything? For example, the president brought up – if you're going to get these people subsidies, let them get the money and decide what they're going to do with what insurance to pick. Don't give the money to insurance companies. And, you know, do you expect them to do anything because they don't want to be blamed necessarily for everyone's premiums going up, even though they don't have anything to do with Obamacare?
Yeah, do I expect them? I mean, Trump's MO has been executive orders, coming up with an idea like we saw this past week with you know, subsidizing the fat reducing drugs, the diabetes drugs, and helping you know Medicare and other subsidies for those types of really really innovative medications. I don't think look at what's gone through Congress this term, very very little. I think it's unlikely that there's going to be any real significant change that's going to be able to pass, get the 60 votes to pass through Congress, pass through the Senate. So I think if there's anything, it's going to be more on the bully pulpit side of things. The president using – probably expect a little more travel domestically for the president to tout the economy, tout you know, any ideas he has in terms of helping people pay for health care. But, no, I don't see anything legislatively.
So let's go to Venezuela and where the gang, I guess 13, got briefed of our military presence in there. And I'm impressed that I heard that it was such a thorough briefing and it was pretty clear that those ships, those boats were definitely drug boats, and even Democrats were not that critical. Here's Adam Smith, Cut 27.
So are we going to war with Venezuela?
I don't know, is the honest truth.
Have you been briefed?
Yes. Based on that briefing, I think the administration does not want to go to war with Venezuela.
So he doesn't think they want to go to war, but our presence is there, and now China is trying to keep Maduro alive with goods and services and basically ignoring any of the sanctions.
Yeah, look, Adam Smith is probably one of the more serious voices on the Democratic Party when it comes to foreign policy, and for him not to overreact as you hear other Democrats do is, I think, a pretty notable signal. But I think there's a debate within the administration over how far to take things. There is, I think, parts of the MAGA base that are wary of getting too entwined in South America. But I do think the goal of preventing drugs from reaching our shores, from interdiction, that is generally a safe space to be in terms of where public opinion is. So I think there is a little wariness on just making sure this doesn't, you know, ramp up to a degree that we won't expect. But in the general sense of things, the fact that you have Democrats like Adam Smith on board, I think, is an encouraging sign for the White House.
Yeah, I think, well, it's interesting. How do you feel about the FBI's press conference yesterday announcing that they've gotten China to agree to stop moving the precursors to our border? Here's Kash Patel, Cut 49.
This was the first time an FBI director has been to China in over a decade and received the audience with his counterpart to address this matter directly. And again, thanks to President Trump's direct engagement with President Xi, the government of China committed fully to my engagement there on the ground in Beijing at a level never seen before. While at Ministry of Public Security headquarters, I met with my counterpart at MPS, where the Chinese government agreed on a plan to stop fentanyl precursors. What does that mean? The People's Republic of China has fully designated and listed all 13 precursors utilized to make fentanyl Furthermore, they have agreed to control 7 chemical subsidiaries that are also utilized to produce this lethal drug.
So this is pretty specific. We told them exactly where the stuff was coming out of. We told them the chemicals that need to be stopped. For Kesh Patel to go over there, I'm more encouraged than ever that they're serious. Are you?
Yeah, look, when we were talking.
I don't like to give up. There you go. Gash, could you repeat that? We lost you for a second.
We lost you for a second.
Oh, now he's gone. So I'm more convinced than ever that China's serious. Here's what else Cash had to say. Cut 50.
Effective immediately, essentially, President Trump has shut off the pipeline that creates fentanyl that kills tens of thousands of Americans. These substances are now banned, and they will no longer be utilized by the Mexican drug trafficking organizations or any other DTOs around the world to make this drug. This historic achievement has saved tens of thousands of lives.
And it will. I mean, think about it. The president says, I'm going to stop drugs. And we just played the rest of Kesh Patel's cut, Josh. How is this resonating when Kesh goes to China and comes back with this specific type of an agreement?
Yeah, look, I think this is the follow-up from when Trump was in Asia and met with Xi and took there were some notable developments from that conversation. And I think restricting fentanyl and what you heard Kesh Patel say is fruits from that initial face-to-face that Trump had with the Chinese leader. So very encouraging. I think we kind of wondered at the time, what was the follow-through going to be? It's one thing to say this in an agreement, one thing to put out a statement, but to actually follow through and see movement. But Patel's comments do offer some encouragement that there actually is action taking place.
Yeah, we'll have to see. So we'll see what comes up next. The president of the United States has nothing big on the schedule, but the Epstein files appearing in the New York Times just when the shutdown seemed to be going against the Democrats' way. We're used to this with the Russia hoax. I know it's not a coincidence. How damaging, if at all, from what you read, are what we know about the Epstein files on the president?
Yeah, there's politics in Washington. That's shocking, but it's predictable. And I think we knew that the issue of the Epstein files was going to come up once the government shutdown ended. It's something that was on the docket well right before the debate over government funding. Look, I think it's a political. I mean, I always say, Brian, you probably heard this from me before. The party that's divided is the party that's not winning a political fight. And while Republicans have been generally on the same page when it comes to voting on release of the Epstein files and being, you know, holding the line, you do have notable names like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and some of the kind of the populist right and some of the big MAGA right figures that have defected. Not many, but enough to give Trump a headache on this front. So, you know, I think there it could be more there, but I think the devil's in the details, and these emails certainly don't help. But I think the bigger problem is if Republicans start criticizing Trump or not defending Trump, that's what's going to be the bigger problem.
Yeah, except for Tom Massey. You know that. That's what he kind of staking his name on there in a bit of rivalry. Expect that. Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Josh.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, when we come back, we'll be able to take some of your calls, too. We'll talk more about that. And also take a look at what is happening with Venezuela. So we'll go more about that, because I think at any moment something could happen. But I will point out this: when it comes to Central and South America, don't necessarily look at military action. Look at with these governments. Chile's going to have an election. The conservatives about to win. We understand that in Colombia, they are now letting us train there. Should there be a Venezuelan jungle fight, which we might be in, we're getting training in Colombia again. So there seems to be somewhat of a thaw there. Ecuador, El Salvador has turned into an ally, as has Ecuador. Bolivia now put a conservative government in place. This is a huge pushback on the influence of Cuba, Russia, Iran, and China. And I love it. Don't move.
Where big stories meet bigger conversations. Stay informed and energized with the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Recently, a close friend of mine experienced an unexpected loss. Watching their family struggle emotionally and financially made me stop and think seriously about my own family's future. As the primary provider, I know how important it is to make sure that if anything ever happened to me, my family would still be able to manage. So I realized that without life insurance, my family would be left with overwhelming financial burdens. I looked into coverage before, but the process always felt complicated. Got endless forms, phone calls, and medical exams. It made everything take weeks. So that's why Ethos stood out to me. Their process is simple and 100% online. There's no medical exam required, just a few health questions, and you get a quote in as little as 10 minutes. In many cases, you can even receive same-day coverage without ever leaving your house. Ethos offers up to $3 million in coverage, with some policies starting as low as $2 a day, billed monthly. It's a trustworthy company that's changing the way people think about life insurance. So protect your family's financial future with life insurance from Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/Brian. That's ethos.com/Brian. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
How do you do against Gramps in golf?
He's pretty good. He's pretty good. Yeah, he is pretty good. I mean, we have some tight matches, you know. Can't say much, but yeah, we have some tight matches.
Have you beat him yet, or?
I'll leave that up to you to decide. I don't know. We play a lot. We have a great time out there. We're always on the same team as well.
Just curious who you work on your game with, and did your grandfather give you any advice for this week?
I know my game pretty well, so I have a few people watch things over, but I don't really work with anyone right now at the moment. And my grandpa pretty much told me, you know, just go out there, have fun, and just don't get nervous, and try my best not to.
So there you go. The LPGA is so smart to bring in the aspiring college star golfer, Kai Trump, granddaughter of Donald Trump, who the president of the United States, no one likes golf like he does and knows it better. So as all those golf clubs as well. They play all the time. She's extremely talented, loves to play. And now her mom, who's divorced from Don Jr., is dating Tiger. And she went on to say that Tiger is a big help and is a nicer guy than he is a golfer and the best in the world. I imagine he's a great instructor. She's 17 years old. She's playing in the Annika tournament after Annika Sorenstam, maybe the greatest female golfer ever. And the LPGA, which has got a lot of talent but not big names, this is something they need. They also have Caitlin Clark in the tournament, who's back for the second straight year, then WNBA superstar. Evidently, she loves golf. The other big story was, do you remember over the weekend when the President of the United States showed up at the Commanders game? Obviously, D.C., all those fans don't vote for the president. I think 95% voted for Kamala Harris, so they booed a little bit. Well, the Lions defensive back, St. Brown, apologizes if he offended anyone with his Trump dance in the end zone against the Commanders. He said, even after the game, someone tells me that's the first game that the president has been to in over 40 years. It's a special game. If I offended everyone, I do apologize. I do not mean to offend anyone. It was just me having fun doing the Trump dance. If any president was at the game, if they had a dance, I would have done it. It had nothing to do with who the president was. Number one, why are you apologizing? The whole country elected him. You know, not everyone voted for him, but he got a lot of states, a ton of counties, especially in Michigan. He won your state in Michigan. So don't apologize. You know, if people saluted Biden, he never would apologize. If he did a salute to the President of the United States, if it was Joe Biden or Barack Obama, do you think he would have felt compelled to apologize the next day? I mean, that stuff has just got to stop. Why are you getting on him for doing the Trump dance anyway? You know who also likes the president? A lot of football players, including Saquon Barkley. So he's not a flamboyant guy by trade, but he might do the same thing. You might see Saquon, the running back for the Eagles, golfing with the president. So I think people got to get over it. I thought we were over it, to be honest. I thought that was pretty much lost in the last administration. So that's some of the things that are going on. Some of the other stories that are going on. Meanwhile, the Air Force families are given the go-ahead now for early Christmas. Do you hear about this? We did this on Fox and Friends. I think it had everything to do with turning it over. A spokesperson for Balfour Realty, they said they ordered the Air Force families to take down Christmas decorations because, quote, it's too early. After this became national news, we talked about it on our show, they quickly reversed themselves and said, our holiday decoration guidelines are designed to provide a general framework to help maintain the consistency in our communities. We value the joy and creativity our residents have to bring their neighborhoods, especially during the holidays, and apologize for any confusion. So Air Force families, you don't have to take it down and put it back up after Thanksgiving. But if you ask me, don't rush it. Give Thanksgiving its time. Do your Black Friday, and then you start your Christmas season. But you should not be penalized for doing it. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here. Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete. Not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. It's going to be a big hour. We'll keep you up to date on what's happening, especially in Washington, where today is going to be kind of a big day. Marco Rubio's got a meeting with their Argentina counterpart, as well as he's going to be meeting. He's got Argentina. He's got Brazil. Today, I think he's working on some trade as well as some international relations, because we know the president's been at loggerheads with that terrible Brazilian leader. But we do have to get some of the prices down on coffee and bananas and things of that nature. I think it's all going to be on the dock. And Blue Origin really wants to compete with SpaceX and is going to get a chance. The Blue Origin New Glenn rocket is going to be shot into space. It's going to be see if they can land it successfully. It's going to be the type of rocket that eventually get to Mars, if they can refuel in space, and that's going to be key. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
My administration and our partners in Congress will continue our work to lower the cost of living, restore public safety, grow our economy, and make America affordable again.
And that's going to be the one that can keep his party in power in the midterms. Making America affordable again. The Trump team rolls out another plan to help the average American family. I'll explain.
Number two.
Interdictions continue. The problem is interdictions alone are not effective. You have to disincentivize this industry that these terrorists are using to flood our country with heroin, with cocaine, with fentanyl.
Yeah, I think he's right. And I don't think that he's going to budge. Marco Rubio, Venezuela standoff, China inserting itself, UK condemning our actions, France going along with it. We have to find out who our real friends are, but it's not going to stop us from acting to stop the flow of drugs into our country and around the world.
Number one.
I think we're in an unprecedented moment that demands that we consider whether or not it's the time for new leadership.
Do you think the Senate Democrats need a new leader?
Yes, I do, but that's not in my hands.
Yes, you're a congresswoman. Shutdown over, fallout began, left going after the way left and the way left going after the moderates. My question is, how do we stop the shutdown from ever happening again? The damage is too great to everybody. You know, the military's not getting paid. Federal workers aren't getting paid. Air traffic controllers, TSA agents. It's just a massive price to be paid for lawmakers who still got paid and got to stay home for 7 weeks. And guess where they are today? They went home. It's absolutely crazy. Let's bring in my next guest. He's Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, Senior Director of the Center for Cyber and Technology Innovation for Freedom of Defense of Democracy. Welcome back, Admiral.
Hey, thank you for having me, Brian.
So, Admiral, it turns out we got called out by some of our allies. They're not going to share intelligence with us off the coast of the Caribbean, their Caribbean properties, or anywhere in the region. How do you feel about that? They don't like what we're doing with the ships, those boats that are going, moving drugs throughout the area.
You know, so this is interesting. I'm going to break it up into, I think I personally would attack these boats in a different way, but I'm not the president and the secretary of war, so they get to do it the way they want. But the sharing of intel, if you're concerned that we're not hitting the right ships, not sharing the intel with us is the exact opposite thing to do. It makes no sense to me. The good allies, look, do we have collateral damage on strikes, you know, not routinely, but on occasion? Yes. How do you avoid that? Good intelligence. So if you think you're producing good intelligence as a European partner of the United States, the exact wrong attitude is to pull that intelligence from the United States as we're conducting sophisticated strikes against these narco networks.
You think we're being effective?
No, I actually think we're shooting arrows and not the archer. If we want to be effective, we need to place some precision guided munitions into the factories producing the cocaine. The paste comes over from Colombia. I think it was made into powder and in Venezuela, and then shipped out to the United States, these islands in Europe. We should strike it there. I mean, you would do 100 boats worth of damage in one strike, maybe two. You know, I couldn't even imagine, you know, the difference between what a factory has in it versus what an individual small boat has in it is pretty significant. That's how you do it. And you have a much more likely chance of holding the actual owners and operators of these illegal narco factories accountable by destroying their facilities. When you sink these boats, they're not owned. Most of these boats, they contract them out for the use of this, you know, for this narco delivery. So I actually would hit the quiver of arrows or the archer, not the actual individual arrows.
So you'd hit inside Venezuela?
Inside Venezuela, yeah. If this is a national security, look, if your argument as the president is that this is a national security imperative, why limit yourself to picking off the small guys? Go after the big guys. And look, our missiles will get through and our pilots will not be at risk.
So
we know that.
So do you think that it does send a message with these ships?
Yeah, it is. It's messaging. I consider it a little performative. Look, personally, I'd be using law enforcement to take the ships over. I think this is unnecessary, but I would use kinetic weapons against the factories because there's no law enforcement. We can't drop a bunch of DE agents into Venezuela.
So
we're going to have to take those out.
Do you think we're getting that to that point? That's the show of muscle we're seeing.
If that's what we want to do, if we want to stop the flow of these drugs, that's how you do it. You don't do it one boat at a time. You know, 17 boats over 4 weeks. That's not going to stop the flow.
So I want you to hear Marco Rubio talked about what's happening because now Venezuela says they're mobilizing. Cut 23.
Any response to Venezuela's government saying that it's doing a massive military mobilization in response to what they call a threat from the United States?
Yeah, they don't have a government. There's an illegitimate regime that's basically a narco-trafficking organization that's empowered itself. By the way, many of the countries represented here at the G7 don't recognize the Maduro regime as a legitimate government. So I don't generally respond to what they're saying.
So they're starting to mobilize. We're starting to train in jungle training in Colombia as well.
Listen, I'm not arguing for a ground-based invasion here. What I'm arguing for and what I think our administration will do is a very sophisticated air campaign against the narco-terrorists, potentially against the military for its support to the illegal regime, and then eventually potentially against the illegal regime. There's a lot of ways to get rid of Maduro. I would like to do it in a way that caused the least civilian casualties, you know, when there's a populist uprising to restore the duly elected president.
Don't you think it makes it the job easier? Nobody wants to overthrow a government. We'd rather things worked out themselves. But if it affects the U.S. security, that's different. But the fact is they had an election. We know exactly who the people want to win. We're not picking up Venezuelans that live in Miami and saying, do me a favor, run the country. So that's a very reasonable thing to do. But the whole problem is, where's the loyalty to the army?
Well, I think a lot of the army is loyal to the Minister of Defense, Minister of Interior, and the president. I mean, they've been part of a kleptocracy over some period of time. I'm not going to say all of them, but and I'm confident some of them would run for the hills, so to speak, you know, if either the United States threatened something or they saw Maduro teeter. I mean, our biggest problem is I don't think Maduro has a plane that can get him to Russia so he can get a dacha next to Hafez al-Assad, you know, outside Moscow, because that's where he needs to go. I mean, the proper solution to this is to exfiltrate him, get him out of the country and allow the duly elected president to take the position.
The other big story is China. China's inserting themselves back in the area. They're going to be supplying and basically taking over Venezuela if we let them. We know Iran and Russia has a presence. But let's talk about China for a second. We're talking to Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery. Admiral, you wrote a column just about how China's getting closer and closer to moving on Taiwan. When that was brought up by Japan, they basically threatened to cut off the prime minister's head. So bring us into the Pacific.
First, I'm liking the new prime minister of Japan. She says she's feisty. She is And she was mentored by Prime Minister, former Prime Minister, the late Prime Minister Abe, and it shows. So look, what's going on here? China, I'm not saying that China is more likely to do a cross-strait invasion, that kind of most dangerous scenario. I think we've made investments, as have Japan and Taiwan and Australia, to kind of push that off even beyond 2027. What's likely is the most likely scenario, which is a cyber-enabled economic warfare campaign. It's going on right now. That's using diplomatic tools, law, legislative tools, legal tools, economic tools, cyber influence operations to weaken the societal resilience of Taiwan. And the real risk is energy. Taiwan, you know, takes it's 100% imported. They have to import their fuel. 50% of it's liquefied natural gas, and they only have 6 or 7 or 10 days worth of on island stowage. If the Chinese can cut that off, Brian, the electrical power grid of Taiwan will cut down to 50% of their normal load.
How protected is it?
It's one of the most fragile grids in the world because it's maintaining such a high, it's so much of it's running. 75% of it's running all the time as compared to, say, 60 or 65% in the U.S. What that means is they have no room for cyber error. If there's a cyber strike, if there's just an actual casualty, they're right at the limit. And then when you cut off the LNG, the president of Taiwan's got to make a tough choice. Do I give power to my people, you know, to homes and hospitals, or do I give power to my industrial capacity, TSMC and UMC, the people who make all the chips for everything in the world? And he'll probably choose number two. And Taiwan's small problem will become a world economic maelstrom.
Does it worry you that we have so many assets in our hemisphere?
Yeah. Well, look, China's trying their hardest to pressure, you know, to create challenges for the United States, pressuring us. And their Africa one doesn't push us too hard, although there are some critical minerals and rare earth elements to look at in Africa. But getting into our hemisphere is pure, you know, there's a little bit of economic gain to China. There's a lot of the idea of putting pressure on the United States, trying to force us to focus here so that we can't support our allies in Asia, which, you know, as you mentioned, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, the Philippines, Australia, longtime treaty allies of the United States.
You'd even say Vietnam these days. They seem to like us a lot better than they do China. So, Admiral, big picture question. What do you think bothers China most about Taiwan? Does it give their people an idea of how their life could be if they just were allowed to have a somewhat representative government? Do they hate that example that clearly is getting to their people?
That's exactly it. It's the China that worked. It's the China that has democracy. It's the China that has free elections. It's the China that has capitalism. It's the China that, with a very small, you know, a population, 1/50th the size of mainland China's, has become the dominant semiconductor, you know, for logic chips, for high-end chips. I mean, Taiwan is the most fantastic example of democracy in Asia that you can imagine. And over a short 35 years, they've really done this. It is a terrible example for the Chinese Communist Party, for their people to see what Taiwan has done. And they're going to do everything they can to coerce Taiwan into becoming part of China and losing that example to their people.
And lastly, just on what's happening with Ukraine and Russia, I hear Ukraine's making big gains in targeting the oil and gas and the energy of Russia. Russia's starting to make some gains on the ground, however, correct?
That's exactly it. But these are small gains. Look, as I've told you before, Ukraine is not going to lose. They're not going to lose this war, Brian. They're going to lose a few kilometers here, kilometers there. They're not going to lose. Their societal resilience is so strong. But they can, in time, lose a lot more people, a lot more critical infrastructure. So these attacks they're doing now, imposing cost on Russia, is going to drive Russia out of this. You know, that, when you combine it with the president's recent decisions on sanctions, European actions on sanctions. I wish we hadn't given Hungary that waiver, but still, push on India to get India to stop taking the shadow fleet. If we can lower Russia's fossil fuel sales and at the same time Ukraine strike their refineries, you're going to force Putin to choose between his war machine and keeping his base together domestically, and he's eventually going to have to stop the war go for a seat.
We saw that picture of him, and his hands were all swollen, and we see a lot of people are starting rumors again about his health. What do you hear, Admiral Montgomery?
So it's hard to say. Look, first of all, I mean, he's actually got his sister studying, you know, she's a doctor on life extension. I mean, think what, remember he and Xi like a month ago,
yeah,
we're talking about living to 150 and organ transplants. It was a little kind of, you know, it was a little dark.
You think?
But yeah. Look, he, I don't know that he's been sick. He's gotten better. I'm not rooting. I mean, I'm okay. What I'm rooting for, I'm not relying on that to solve this problem. This problem has to be solved by President Zelensky, the Secretary General Ruta, President Trump, and the other leaders of the free world, imposing our will on Russia's war fighting machine.
Right. They definitely didn't plan on a 4-year war. I'll tell you that. Admiral Montgomery, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Always great.
Thank you for having me, sir.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Got a bottom of the air. We're going to talk to Morgan Murphy, running for a Senate over in Alabama. We know that Tommy Tuberville is going to be the next governor of Alabama. He's running. So that opens up that slot. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
What do you make of the redaction of the alleged victim from this very, very damning email, Bhatia?
It's so hilarious to me because they knew if they left her name in, this would be totally dismissed because she has been revealed to be a serial fabricator who had to literally recant her testimony against Alan Dershowitz. She's made up so many things. Her book was initially supposed to be a novel because so much of it was just absolute fabrications. Unfortunately, she took her own life. It's very sad, obviously very troubled. But the idea that this is somehow like a smoking gun for Trump, I think is so utterly ridiculous. To see the Democrats racing to take the word of an actual pedophile, Jeffrey Epstein, just so they can smear Donald Trump. It's just so gross. It's like when they went to the trough of Michael Cohen and elevated him as some sort of truth teller because they thought it would hurt Donald Trump. I just think if this is all they could find in there on Donald Trump and Epstein, Trump is in a really good place. We know that he kicked Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago because he thought he was a creep. So the idea that it's somehow some smoking gun, you know, that he thought he was a creep, I think is so totally ridiculous. The replacement of her name with the word victim tells you everything you need to know.
And that's how Virginia Joffrey, who was with the prince was indicted, basically lost everything because of his relationship with her, which he denied, which has turned out to be true. But Virginia Joffrey was taken to court by Alan Dershowitz and got an apology in response. They tried to go after Alan Dershowitz, and he fought back. He wants all the records released, and he does not believe that it will make Trump look bad at all. He thinks there's no there. And what they're talking about is they put victim in this release yesterday in the New York Times. And the victim is Virginia Joffrey, who's already on the record saying, "No, I had no negative experience and no abuse took place. Never spent any one-on-one time with President Donald Trump." Now, the email says something different, but she's on the record before she sadly committed suicide and saying there was nothing there. But if you put her name in, is what Bhatia was saying, then people realize there's a counter to this statement, and that's her. And you think she was protecting people at this point? Her book is, I think, number one. So I think it was the only one that was ahead of Bret Baier's book. So that's what people are running with. I'm just seeing, you know, just from looking at some of the footage on the other channels, you would think there's no other story today. But the American people are not going to fall for it. We did for the Russia hoax. Everything, every time the president did something different or good, you would hear about a Russia revelation. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about politics, where we go from here, and who's going to run for the Senate next. Brian Kilmeade.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
House Democrats will continue to fight to address the health care crisis that Republicans have created. And House Democrats will continue to fight to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits for tens of millions of Americans. This fight is not over. We're just getting started. We'll fight today. We'll fight tomorrow. We'll fight this week. We'll fight next week. We'll fight this month. We'll fight next month. We'll fight until we win this battle for the American people.
It's over. What are you talking about? You fought, you extended and tortured the country. They paid a huge price, 1.4 million people not getting paid. That's not enough for you. And then after losing, you're going to say you haven't given up. Give up and come up with an idea. Don't just say, I'm going to fight. Fight what? With what? Come up with ideas that are better and win an election. You did very well last Tuesday. Maybe it's because people perceive that Republicans were more responsible, which any clear-thinking person knows they weren't. They're looking to renew on Biden-level spending until they could work out all the appropriations bills. So they shut down the government, and they blamed health care. It's just astounding that that's his speech. Morgan Murphy is running for Senate in Alabama. He's served in the military. He also worked did a lot of work with President Trump. He enters a crowded Republican field for that spot. But, man, does he have great qualifications. Morgan, welcome.
Brian, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Morgan, you sure you want part of that chaos? I mean, wasn't that embarrassing?
Man, it is. It's a mess. You know, it's a food fight every day in Congress. But to hear some of these people talk about fighting, they've never been in a real fight. And they don't know what that is. And it's just pitiful what the Democrats did to this country for the past 40 days. We were on track. Our GDP was hitting 3.8% under President Trump. That is the first real growth since he was last in office. We were pulling out of this Biden economy, and the Democrats tried to drive us right back into a ditch.
So you worked for President Trump through the previous administration, also mostly served at the White House as head of public diplomacy for the president. Also special envoy to Ukraine and Russia, and you served at war in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Just Afghanistan. They sent me, I'm a 26-year Navy veteran, captain in the Navy, and they sent me to a landlocked country, so that's government irony for you.
So your thoughts about this version of President Trump as opposed to 45?
Well, what I can say is experience matters, and you can see Trump was great as our 45th president, but look at what he's doing this time around. He knows the swamp. He knows where the creatures are. He knows who to trust, and more importantly, he knows who not to trust, and he's been so much more effective this time around because he's assembled people with him that won't betray him. I saw the betrayal firsthand in Trump 45. I saw, you know, cabinet members, even people who should be the most loyal to the president. He gave them their jobs, absolutely try to throw him under the bus. And this time around, can you imagine a cabinet member now getting out in front of the president? Not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, they really seem to connect with each other as well as the president. So they seem like a pretty tight unit. Let's talk about what you know about Ukraine right now. Do you think the president should give him tomahawks?
You know, I think the pressure point on Ukraine is oil. Russia is an oil and gas. They're a big gas station, right, with nuclear weapons. And so the interesting thing I think that's being discussed is the shadow fleet. Biden never did really put pressure on Russia's oil. He didn't want to drive up. Oil's a global commodity. He didn't want to drive up the price of oil at the pump and risk his election future by making Americans pay $5 for gasoline at the pump. But this president, President Trump, has restored relations with Saudi Arabia. We're pumping an additional million barrels of oil a day in the United States since he took office. It's incredible. So we've got more flexibility to really be punitive with Putin on the oil front. And that's, I think, where the real pressure will be.
Right. So let them destroy Putin's energy sector.
Yeah, you take the money out of his war machine, and he's got real problems. Can you imagine every combatant command in the United States focused, like, you know, UCOM, SOUTHCOM, SOCOM, all of them? You know, the president says, seize Quebec. And they couldn't do it. I mean, that's incredible. I think it's an embarrassment that Putin's army hasn't been able to get to Kyiv. Biden was talking about, oh, no, he might go to He might go all the way to Berlin. He couldn't get to Kyiv. He couldn't get to Warsaw. He's not getting to Berlin.
But Morgan, doesn't it also show you, and you were captain of the army, I should call you captain, but doesn't it also tell you our intelligence was bad? Because his intelligence did, our intelligence, CIA did say it was going to fall in 3 days.
Oh, yeah. No, our intelligence is rotten. I was in the United States Senate in the most super secret, spooky squirrel kind of, you know, briefing. And they came and they told us, well, Afghanistan's going to be fine for 9 months. We saw how that worked out. And then they came and they told us, well, Kyiv is going to be gone in 3 days. We need to get, you know, we need to get Zelensky out of there. You know, the intelligence briefings that we've got a huge problem in our intelligence community and how they give our elected leaders information. And that's why, to me, it's so important that we send someone with experience to Washington who knows what to believe and when not to believe it.
So basically, you're going to run for the Senate. Tommy Tuberville's moving over. He's going to run to be governor.
That's right.
So do you think you have the president's endorsement?
I'm going to earn the president's endorsement. I'm going to earn Coach's endorsement. When I got in the race, I worked for Tommy Tuberville. We call him Coach. Everyone who works for him calls him Coach. He said, looked at me and said, well, Morgan, you're going to have to earn it like any coach would. And he wants to see grassroots support here. I got 90 veterans from all 67 counties this week endorsed me. I'm really proud of that endorsement. A lot of former Trump officials, from Sean Spicer, the former Secretary of Defense, Katie McFarland. Very proud of those endorsements. But what really matters is the voters in Alabama. And that's what the president's going to be looking at is, you know, what do they want? He's not a top-down guy. He wants to hear from the base. And the base is ultimately going to make the decision here.
How do you feel our Pentagon is functioning now? How do you feel like Langley is functioning now, CIA? I know Radcliffe could be the right guy, but he can't do everything. With the CIA, how do you think it's functioning?
Well, I think it's getting better. And I met with him several months back, and he's an extraordinarily impressive person. And he's got a grip on what needs to be done there. And that's first, is to understand the process. And to the Department of War, I mean, thank goodness for Pete Hegseth. Our Navy, when I joined the Navy, Brian, in 1999, we were the world's biggest fleet. No one could mess with us. Russia was rusty. They couldn't get their ships out of port. The Chinese were basically a fishing fleet. Today, we're number two in the world. China built 900 ships last year. The United States built 7. This is a national security emergency. When I'm in the Senate, I'm going to be jumping up and down on top of my desk talking about this because America has to get back to building things. Pete Hegseth talked about this last week, saying procurement, fancy way of saying buying things, in the Pentagon is broken, and it is broken. Every weapon system we have, from the big ones to the small ones, every weapon system is behind schedule and over budget, and he's working to fix that, thank goodness.
So what do you think is going to happen in Venezuela?
Well, we've sent the big stick down there. We've sent the Gerald R. Ford down there. And let me tell you, as a Navy guy, when you send a carrier strike group off some dirtbag's backyard, it tends to get their attention. 4 sovereign acres of U.S. territory is now floating off the coast of Venezuela with more firepower than most European countries. So it definitely has their attention. The president's been clear. And Donald J. Trump is not somebody you want to mess around with when he issues an order.
Do you worry about so many assets in our hemisphere as opposed to Pacific, where China continues to be a threat?
It's about time we have assets in our hemisphere. You know, we don't have, other than Gitmo in Cuba, we don't really have a base in the southern hemisphere, and that's our hemisphere. I'm a big fan of the Monroe Doctrine. I love that President Trump is taking care of our own backyard. It's America first, and in this case, it's the Americas first. China is certainly an enormous threat, but we have to take care of our own backyard first before we start with Taiwan and Cuba and Korea and others.
What do you think the most important thing to focus on in Alabama is?
Well, in Alabama, what we need is jobs. And Alabama has been leading the way. We're one of 6 states in the nation where manufacturing is the largest employer. The other 40-some-odd states, healthcare is the largest employer. Manufacturing jobs pay well, They produce things. They add to our national security. You can't convert a YouTuber into a welder very easily in time of war. You know, World War II, we converted Cadillac-made tanks and Packard-made planes and Ford-made planes and Singer aircraft, I mean, Singer sewing machine-made, Colt 45s. And that's an urgent matter of national security that as Americans, we build things. And here in Alabama, we're building things. We're building Mercedes, ThyssenKrupp, Boeing, Honda, Hyundai, Airbus, and the list goes on and on. I'm really proud of that. I want to see the rest of the country adopt that model so that when you go to Walmart or Amazon, you click on something, it doesn't say those dreaded three words, made in China.
Right. Morgan Murphy, he's running for Senate in Alabama. He's got a lengthy resume. It's going to be a crowded field because the sense is you win the primary, you're going to win the general. Morgan, thanks so much. Best of luck.
Hey, great to be with you, Brian. Thank you.
You got it. When we come back, I'll be able to read your emails, briankilmeade.com, and also get to your phone calls, 1-866-408-7669. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What a piece of garbage. This is what happens. I'm curious if we're going to want to take guns away now from who will inevitably be the white man who shot and killed him. Bye, Charlie.
So that's his idiot teacher. His name is Benjamin Philo on TikTok reacting to Charlie Kirk's death. And he's a teacher at Burlington High School, social studies teacher. So he thinks that it'd be a great idea to go public with his belief on his very popular but corrupt social media platform and go after the death of Charlie Kirk. This is what most normal people can't understand. Someone gets killed in cold blood and you don't agree with him, so you're glad he's dead and you revel in his death, or you mock his death at different turning points. Well, because of that, Turning Point is capitalizing on it. They're not backing down. They're taking on this fight, and they're going to launch a Turning Point chapter at that high school. This guy shouldn't have a job. I know these teachers get so protected by their unions, although teachers complain their unions aren't powerful enough. I think it's just the opposite. And this guy he's activated the students who said that. Now, a bunch of conservative kids have gone after that teacher who called him garbage, and they've launched their own branch. Here's a quote from the vice president of Turning Point on that school teacher. Associate says this: what inspired me personally to start the Turning Point chapter was that teacher at our school that said after Charlie Kirk's death, he made TikTok about how he has no remorse over how he was a hateful person. His name is Braden Ryan. Now he's co-running the Turning Point chapter at that school. And that's got to be the action. Because you just got to take action after that. These are peaceful groups that want to get into political debate, want to do it for a living when they get older. They like the idea of talking about something other than what they're doing that night or studying for that day's school or trying to pass that class. But overall, there's still very little talk about the violence that erupted on Monday night at Berkeley. Gavin Newsom broke his silence saying this, even though he's in Brazil pretending to be a green president. Says violence is not a legitimate exercise of First Amendment rights. While people have the right to protest, it must be done peacefully. What about condemning the people that did it? You got a name. This guy's been arrested. You saw this one clown. His name is Jihad. He's an Antifa member. I think that he ripped a cross off one of the Turning Point attendees who went after him. And this guy went to run and to get loose. He punched him in the face and the guy was bleeding, but he was, to his credit, he wasn't giving up. He was going to chase this guy down. So, by the way, there's another California University student failed in their third attempt to form a chapter. It's at Point Loma Nazarene University over in San Diego. The guy's just trying to establish and get a Turning Point USA chapter. The school is not letting them. They announced that in an email sent to students by the university that the president basically doesn't want it at their school. I don't understand that. If someone said, hey, we're going to start a Democratic organization, Republican organization, isn't that what the school's about? I mean, there's a whole system based in where if you could go to your school, feel an attachment to something, you're more likely to come back to that school, say good things about the school, and maybe contribute to the school. Now these people are going to leave that school saying to themselves, why the hell did I pick it? Why did I decide to go here? So I think that they have ended their tour, their Charlie Kirk tour that he choreographed, he wrote out, he picked it out meticulously, and was probably going to recap it in places like our show. Now that he's gone, they went ahead with the tour. It was an outstanding success. He used a lot of big names, a lot of big politicians, governors and senators, the president's family, which was really important. But now that this is done, I think you got to recalibrate, and you got to turn that group into a voting group. And there's Turning Point. There's Turning Point Action, and Turning Point Action is the one that gets voters out. They register voters. If they can't get young voters out, Republicans are not going to have success in the midterms. They lost a lot of youth vote, and they lost a lot of Hispanic vote. Ray, you're in Oklahoma. Ray, what's on your mind?
Hey, Brian, I wanted to tell you that the person that called earlier about getting the price of diesel down is exactly right. It's cheaper to make diesel than it is gasoline. And when I was younger, I'm 77 now, but when I was younger, diesel was half the price of gas. When it changed is when everybody started to making pickups that was diesel and cars diesel. That's when the price of diesel went up. But it shouldn't be. Price of diesel should be cheaper than gasoline because it takes less to produce it. So I just wanted to
Produced domestically, right? And the reason why that's important, Ray, is because trucks run on diesel, if you can get the diesel price down, it'll help bring prices down, right? Is that your point?
Well, yeah. And then the farmers, all of us use diesel tractors, you know, everything, you know. And back when I was a kid, everything was propane or gasoline. But then, you know, once the diesel got popular, then I feel like that they started gouging everybody on diesel. And if they would bring the price of diesel down, think of all the truckers that go across and the farmers, you know, we put them in our tractors and tractors use a lot of diesel.
Great point.
So
yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, that's real good. And you know what? I will look into that. I had the Treasury Secretary on yesterday. You know, next week we're supposed to get Doug Burgum on. Along with Chris Wright is also running the energy sector. So why is it that diesel is more expensive? I could easily get an answer to that, and I'll find out. Because if you could tackle that, you tackle the prices. They're the ones who deliver the goods on everything. So even though they got some electric trucks that are a disaster. And the other big story with trucks, of course, is illegal immigrants driving them because they had a shortage. Perhaps that was the reason. Not effective. Not a good answer. Thanks so much for the call, Ray. And thanks for keeping it here. Don't forget, go to BrianKilmeade.com. I want to see you on Valentine's Day in 2025 in Fort Myers, Florida. And that's History, Liberty, and Laughs. Keep it here.